right, get ready, because today we're taking a deep dive into a condition that's a guaranteed appearance on your SCE exam.
Oh, you mean acute pancreatitis?
Exactly. We're dissecting all the key points from the acute pancreatitis guide.
Yeah.
You know, the ones specifically focused on the SCE exam.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Our mission today is to make sure you have what you need to absolutely nail those exam questions.
But even more important than the exam, you know, is to make sure you can confidently manage these cases when you're out there in practice.
Definitely. Okay, so let's just jump right in. Can you give us a quick definition of acute pancreatitis, you know, just in case anyone's a little fuzzy on the specifics?
Sure, sure. Acute pancreatitis is basically an inflammatory process, and it affects the exocrine pancreas.
Okay, exocrine pancreas. Got it.
But, and this is important, it's not like one single disease, you know.
What do you mean?
It presents across a whole spectrum.
Oh, I see.
You can see anything from mild edema, which, you know, might resolve pretty quickly with minimal intervention.
Right.
But then on the other end of the spectrum, you have severe necrotizing pancreatitis. Now, that's a whole different beast.
Yeah, that sounds serious.
It is. It's life-threatening.
Really?
The mortality rate can get as high as 20% with that one.
Wow, 20%.
Yeah. It's not something to take lightly.
Definitely a wake-up call. And, I mean, it's not exactly a rare thing either, right?
Yeah.
I feel like we hear about acute pancreatitis more and more these days.
Yeah, you're right. The incidence is actually on the rise. Especially in the UK.
Oh, interesting. Do we have any stats on that?
Yeah, studies show that the UK sees somewhere between like 15 and 42 cases per 100,000 people every year.
Okay, so not insignificant numbers.
No, not at all. And on top of that, there's an annual increase of about 2.7%.
So it's going up.
Yeah, it's definitely something you'll encounter in practice. And, you know, mastering the diagnosis and management is super important.
Agreed. Okay, so we've got the severity down and the prevalence.
Mm-hmm.
But what actually kicks off this whole inflammatory cascade in the first place? Like, what are the usual suspects behind acute pancreatitis?
Well, there's a little geographical twist here. So worldwide, alcohol is actually the biggest culprit, the most common cause.
Right.
But in the UK, it's gallstones.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah, they account for something like 75% of cases here.
So for us practicing in the UK, gallstones should be our top suspicion.
Pretty much. But we can't get tunnel vision. It's still really important to keep a broad differential diagnosis, you know, in mind.
Of course, of course.
Because there are other things that can set off acute pancreatitis too.
Like what?
Well, some medications like corticosteroids or azathioprine.
Okay.
And then there's abdominal trauma, metabolic disorders, things like hypercalcemia and hypertriglyceridemia, and even some infections can be a trigger.
So it's not always straightforward.
Nope. Multifaceted for sure.
All right. So lots of potential triggers. Now let's dig a bit deeper into the pathophysiology. How do these triggers actually lead to inflammation in the pancreas?
Right. So the main event is acinar cell injury. You know, these are the cells that make those strong digestive enzymes.
Yeah, the workhorses of the pancreas.
Exactly. And when they get damaged, they release these enzymes too early, and that can cause a lot of damage.
So instead of breaking down food in the duodenum, the enzymes start attacking the pancreas itself.
Right. And there's this one enzyme, trypsin, that's especially important here.
Trypsin.
Imagine trypsin like a demolition crew. When it gets activated too soon, inside the pancreas, instead of the small intestine, it just starts wreaking havoc, you know, breaking down tissue, triggering inflammation, the whole nine yards.
Wow, like a self-destruct sequence gone wrong.
Exactly.
Now, different causes have different mechanisms, right?
Yeah.
Can you tell us more about how alcohol, you know, being a major trigger globally leads to that acinar cell injury?
Sure. So alcohol, it kind of does a double whammy. First of all, it increases the pressure inside the pancreatic ducts.
Those are the channels that carry the enzymes, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that increased pressure plus the direct toxic effects of alcohol on those acinar cells themselves, that combo can lead to premature enzyme activation within the pancreas.
Ah, so it sets off that destructive cascade we talked about?
Right.
And what about gallstones? How do they fit into all this?
Well, gallstones can actually block the common bile duct.
That's where the bile from the gallbladder and the pancreatic duct meet, right, before they empty into the duodenum.
Yep. So this blockage creates a backlog of both bile and those pancreatic enzymes, which then increases the pressure in the pancreas. And then, guess what?
Premature enzyme activation.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Especially that trypsin we talked about.
So it seems like no matter what the trigger is, it all boils down to those enzymes getting activated inside the pancreas, which then leads to the inflammation, pain, and potentially those serious complications.
You got it. And those complications, we can't forget about those.
Well, sure.
Things like pancreatic necrosis, where parts of the pancreas actually die, that's a big one. And then there's vascular leakage, fluid shifts, potential shock, and of course, the systemic inflammatory response, which can affect lots of different organ systems.
Okay, so we've got a pretty good handle on the mechanisms now. But let's shift gears a bit and talk about diagnosing acute pancreatitis in a clinical setting. What are those red flags, those signs and symptoms that make you suspect it?
Well, the classic presentation is pretty distinct. You'll usually see acute severe pain, and it's usually in the epigastric region.
Okay, so upper abdomen pain.
Right. Patients often describe it as boring or knife-like, and it often radiates to the back.
Oh, that's helpful.
Yeah. And then, nausea and vomiting are common too. They might look pretty distressed, diaphoretic.
So those are our clinical clues.
Okay.
But to confirm the diagnosis, we need something more objective, right? Lab tests.
Definitely. Lab tests are key. We're looking for those pancreatic enzymes in the serum, specifically amylase and lipase.
So a simple blood test.
Yep. And if those are elevated, like 3 times the upper limit of normal, that's a pretty strong indicator of acute pancreatitis.
Those are our biomarkers then. Are there any other lab findings that can be helpful?
Oh, for sure. We also want to check liver function tests, especially the ALT levels.
Okay, why ALT specifically?
Well, if the ALT is elevated, especially if it's more than 3 times the upper limit of normal, it could suggest gallstone pancreatitis.
I see, because the obstruction can impact the liver too.
Exactly.
So we've got the clinical presentation, the enzyme levels, and maybe some clues from the liver tests, but we need to see the pancreas itself, right? Imaging.
Yeah, imaging is essential both for confirming the diagnosis and for figuring out how severe it is.
Okay, so what's the go-to imaging test?
Usually we start with an abdominal ultrasound, especially if we suspect gallstones.
Makes sense.
It's quick, non-invasive, and gives us a good look at the gallbladder and biliary tree.
Okay, so ultrasound first.
Mm.
But what if we need a more detailed view or the ultrasound isn't clear enough?
Then we go for a contrast-enhanced CT scan.
Okay.
Usually we do that after 48 hours from when the symptoms started. And it gives us a really good look at the pancreas, if there's any necrosis, fluid collections, pseudocysts, other complications.
It sounds like we have a pretty solid set of tools for diagnosing acute pancreatitis. We've got the clinical presentation, the lab findings, and then imaging to back it all up.
Exactly.
So once we've diagnosed it, the next step is figuring out how bad it is, right?
Right, and that's where prognostic scoring systems come in.
They help us figure out the severity.
Exactly. They predict how the disease might progress and identify who's at higher risk for complications.
That sounds really important. Especially with a condition that can be so unpredictable.
It is. So let's talk about some of the scoring systems. You've probably heard of SIRS, right?
SIRS, yeah, but remind me what it stands for.
Sure. SIRS stands for Systemic Inflammatory Response Syndrome.
Okay.
Now, it's not specific to just pancreatitis, but it gives us a good idea of the body's overall inflammatory response.
Right.
Which can be a really good indicator of how severe the pancreatitis is.
I see. So even though it's not specific to the pancreas, it can tell us how the body's reacting to the inflammation.
Exactly. So to meet the criteria for SIRS, a patient needs to have at least 2 of the following. A temperature either higher than 38 degrees Celsius or lower than 36. A heart rate over 90 beats per minute, a respiratory rate over 20 breaths per minute, or a PICO2 less than 32 mmHg, and a white blood cell count either above 12,000 per microliter or below 4,000.
So those are our parameters. And what makes SIRS so important specifically for acute pancreatitis?
The big takeaway here is that if the SIRS is persistent, meaning it lasts for more than 48 hours, that's a red flag.
Okay.
Studies have shown a link between persistent SIRS and a much higher risk of complications, including organ failure and death.
How much higher are we talking?
Well, for patients with persistent SIRS, the mortality rate can be as high as 25%.
25%?
Yeah, it's serious.
Yeah.
So we need to pay close attention to SIRS early on.
Wow, definitely a good warning sign. Now, besides SIRS, we also have those scoring systems that are made just for acute pancreatitis, right?
We got it. Let's talk about those, starting with Apache 2. That stands for Acute Physiology and Chronic Health Evaluation Second.
Okay. Apache 2. And what does it tell us?
Well, it's a comprehensive system. It helps predict how severe the illness is, and that includes acute pancreatitis.
So it looks at the patient's whole physiological state, not just the pancreas.
Exactly. It takes into account a lot of things. Vital signs like temperature, heart rate, blood pressure, respiratory rate, blood gases, electrolytes, hematocrit, white blood cell count. Oh, and the patient's age and any other medical problems they have?
It's a pretty detailed assessment. Mm-hmm. And how is the score actually calculated?
Each parameter gets a score based on how severe it is, and then we add them all up. The higher the total score, the sicker the patient, and the higher the risk of dying.
So the higher the score, the worse the prognosis.
Right. Like if the APACHE 2 score is 8 or higher, that's a strong sign of severe acute pancreatitis, and the risk of death is much higher.
Okay, so APACHE 2 gives us a broad risk assessment. What about Ranson's criteria? That's another one I've heard of.
Yeah, Ranson's criteria is a classic. It's been used for ages, and unlike APACHE 2, which is calculated when the patient is admitted, Ranson's uses parameters from both admission and 48 hours later.
So it gives us a picture of how things are changing over time.
Exactly. So at admission, we look at five things: age, white blood cell count, blood glucose level, LDH, and AST.
And what are we looking for with those?
We're looking for signs of older age, systemic inflammation, problems with their metabolism, and potential organ damage. All red flags.
And what do we assess at the 48-hour mark?
At 48 hours, we look at seven parameters: hematocrit, BUN, serum calcium, PaO2, base deficit, fluid sequestration, and estimated fluid sequestration.
So we're monitoring for things like blood loss, kidney problems, electrolyte imbalances, breathing problems, and fluid shifts.
Exactly. All signs that the acute pancreatitis might be getting worse.
And how is the score for Rance's criteria calculated?
Each abnormal parameter, both at admission and 48 hours, gets 1 point. So if the score is 3 or more, it suggests severe acute pancreatitis. And that means a higher risk of complications and death.
So higher Ranson's score, more aggressive treatment.
Basically, yeah.
Okay, so we've covered SIRS, APACHE 2, and Ranson's criteria. Are there any other scoring systems we should know about?
Two more, yeah. There's the modified Glasgow score, also called the IMRI score, and the BISAP score.
Modified Glasgow, all right.
Yeah.
And what's BISAP short for?
BISAP stands for Bedside Index for Severity in Acute Pancreatitis.
Catchy. Let's start with the modified Glasgow score. I've heard there's a mnemonic to help remember the criteria.
You're right. It's pancreas.
Pancreas, okay.
Each letter stands for a parameter: PaO2, age, neutrophils, calcium, renal function, enzymes, albumin, and sugar.
Ah, clever. So it looks at a similar range of things like the other scoring systems.
Yep. And just like Ranson's criteria, each abnormal parameter gets a point. And a score of 3 or higher means severe acute pancreatitis.
Okay, got it. Now what about BISAP? What makes that one different?
BISAP is all about simplicity. You can do it quickly right at the bedside. It looks at five things: BUN, mental status, SIRS, age, and pleural effusion.
So it's a more streamlined approach.
Exactly. And again, each criterion gets a point, and a score of 3 or more means a high risk of dying.
Okay, so we have all these scoring systems. Seems like a lot to keep track of.
Well, they each give us a slightly different perspective on severity, and they help us make better decisions about managing the patient.
True.
But remember, none of them are perfect.
Of course.
Clinical judgment is still the most important thing. We use these tools along with the patient's presentation, history, and how they respond to treatment to make the best decisions.
Right. It's all part of the bigger picture. Okay, so we've talked about diagnosing acute pancreatitis and figuring out how severe it is. What about treatment? What do we do first when a patient comes in with suspected acute pancreatitis?
Well, the initial focus is on supportive care.
Okay, what does that include?
Basically, we want to stabilize the patient, get the pain under control, and prevent or manage any complications.
Sounds good. So what are the specific things we do?
One of the most important things is giving IV fluids, and we do it aggressively.
What kind of fluids?
Usually Ringer's lactate, and we give it at a rate of 5 to 10 millivolts per kilogram per hour. This helps keep enough fluid in their blood vessels, which is really important because they can lose a lot of fluid with acute pancreatitis.
So lots of fluids, quickly.
Yep. Hydration is key. And we also need to manage their pain. Acute pancreatitis can be very painful, so usually we use IV opiates for that.
Makes sense.
And of course, we need to deal with nausea and vomiting, which are super common, so we give them antiemetics. And then we monitor them very closely.
What are we monitoring?
Everything. Vital signs, blood glucose, how well their blood is oxygenated, their acid-base balance, how much urine they're making. We need to make sure they're responding to the treatment and catch any signs of things getting worse.
So we're constantly assessing and adjusting our approach.
Exactly.
Because that's for all patients with acute pancreatitis, right?
Right. Those are the basics.
But the management can change depending on how severe it is.
Absolutely. With mild cases, those initial steps might be all we need.
So they might be able to drink fluids and slowly start eating again as their symptoms get better.
Yeah, exactly. But if it's a severe case, things get a lot more complicated.
All right. Well, let's save that discussion for part 2 of our deep dive. We'll get into the nitty-gritty of managing severe acute pancreatitis then.
Sounds good to me.
Thanks for breaking down all the basics so clearly. I think our listeners are already feeling a lot more confident about acute pancreatitis.
I hope so. We covered a lot of important information today.
We did. And we'll be back next time to tackle those more severe cases and all the challenges they bring. So make sure you tune in for part two of our acute pancreatitis deep dive.
See you then.
Okay, so last time we covered the basics of acute pancreatitis. What it is, what causes it, how we diagnose it, and even how we assess its severity using those different scoring systems.
Right, all the essentials.
Exactly. But now things are going to get a bit more intense because we're moving on to managing severe acute pancreatitis.
Buckle up. This is where things get really interesting.
I'm ready. So let's imagine we have a patient who comes in and we suspect they have severe acute pancreatitis. What are our top priorities? What do we need to do right away?
Well, first things first, we got to stabilize them.
Okay, stabilize, right.
Their vital signs might be off, so we need to address that and make sure their heart and circulation are okay.
So that means?
Aggressive 4V fluids, usually something like normal saline or Ringer's lactate. We need to get that volume back up.
So similar to what we do for all acute pancreatitis patients.
Yeah, but we're talking even more aggressive here. Plus, we might need to give them oxygen, monitor their heart rate and blood pressure really closely, make sure they're making urine. It's all about keeping things under control.
Okay, so fluids and close monitoring are key. What else do we need to do right away?
Labs. We need a whole bunch of blood tests. CBC, CMP, amylase and lipase levels, liver function tests, coagulation studies, ABG.
Wow, the whole works.
Yep. We need to get a good picture of what's happening inside, see if any organs are starting to struggle.
Right, so we can tailor the treatment. And what about imaging? Do we need that too?
Definitely. In these cases, we want a contrast-enhanced CT scan of the abdomen.
CT scan, okay.
It helps us see how bad the inflammation is, if there's any necrosis, fluid collections, or other complications.
Like pseudocysts or abscesses.
Exactly. We need to see the whole picture.
All right. So let's say those blood tests come back and confirm severe acute pancreatitis. Enzymes are sky high. There are signs of SIRS and maybe even some early kidney problems. And the CT scan shows a lot of necrosis and a big fluid collection around the pancreas. Now what?
Okay, well, now the scoring systems we talked about come in handy.
Right, Apache 2, Ranson's, BiSP.
Yep. We calculate those scores, and that helps us figure out just how sick this patient is and how likely they are to have complications or even die.
And let's just say those scores are all really high. What does that mean for our management?
High scores mean high risk. So we need to move this patient to the ICU, stat.
ICU, wow. Okay.
They need close monitoring and much more intensive care. We keep going with the IV fluids, adjust them based on their blood pressure, and make sure the pain is under control with IV opiates. Plus, if they have a history of heavy alcohol use, we need to watch out for withdrawal.
Right, so benzodiazepines, thiamine, and folic acid.
You got it. We can't forget those.
So we're doing everything we can to stabilize them and prevent things from getting worse. But what about that necrosis and the fluid collection? Those sound pretty serious.
They are, and that's where things get tricky. We monitor the collection very carefully, watch it on imaging. If it starts causing problems or if there's any sign of infection, we might have to intervene.
Intervene, meaning?
Well, in this kind of case, we might start with percutaneous drainage.
Can you remind me what that is?
Sure. Basically, we use a needle to drain the fluid, guided by imaging. It's minimally invasive, which is good. And we can send that fluid for culture, make sure there's no infection brewing.
Okay, so that's one option. What if percutaneous drainage isn't enough?
If the necrosis is really bad and doesn't respond to other treatments, we might have to do a surgical necrosectomy.
That sounds like major surgery.
It is. But sometimes it's the only way to remove the dead tissue and prevent things from getting worse.
Right. A last resort. Okay, so lots to think about in terms of managing those complications. But we can't forget about nutrition, can we?
Absolutely not. Getting enough nutrients is critical for healing. But again, how we approach it depends on the situation.
So with severe acute pancreatitis, what's the best way to provide nutrition?
Usually, we go for early enteral feeding.
Enteral, meaning?
It means we deliver the nutrients directly into the stomach or intestines.
Ah, so through a feeding tube.
Exactly. Usually a nasogenital tube.
Okay. And why is that better than just giving IV nutrition?
Well, enteral feeding helps keep the gut healthy and prevents bacteria from leaking out of the intestines. It's also just more natural and has fewer complications.
Okay, enteral feeding first then.
Right. We only use IV nutrition if absolutely necessary.
Got it. Wow, we've really covered a lot of ground today. Severe acute pancreatitis is definitely a challenging condition to manage.
It is, but with careful monitoring, supportive care, and the right interventions, we can really make a difference for these patients.
I agree, and I think our listeners will start to see how all the pieces fit together. Now, there's just one more piece of the puzzle we need to discuss. Those special considerations for alcohol-induced pancreatitis and gallstone pancreatitis. Ready to tackle that?
Absolutely. Let's dive in.
Those case studies were really helpful. I think they showed how important it is to have a systematic approach to acute pancreatitis, recognizing those early signs and then tailoring the management based on how severe it is and the individual patient.
Definitely. It's a tricky condition, that's for sure. It can present in so many different ways. But if we really understand the basics and use our clinical judgment, we can handle these cases effectively.
And speaking of feeling confident, I bet our listeners are feeling a lot more prepared for the SCE exam now.
I hope so. We've covered a lot of the high-yield stuff that they're likely to see on the exam.
All right, well, let's do a quick recap just to make sure we're all on the same page. What are the key takeaways about acute pancreatitis? The things everyone should remember.
Okay, so first of all, remember that acute pancreatitis is all about inflammation in the pancreas. But how it presents and how severe it is can be really different from one patient to the next.
Right, a lot of variability.
And that's why it's so important to recognize it early and figure out how severe it is right away. That's what guides our management and helps us get the best outcomes for our patients.
And those scoring systems we talked about are super helpful for that, right? SIRS, Apache 2, Ranson's criteria, Modified Glasgow, BI-IC, they all give us information about the patient's risk.
Exactly. They help us see who's more likely to have complications. But, and this is important, we can't just rely on the scores alone.
Right, they're just one piece of the puzzle.
We always have to consider the whole clinical picture, what the patient looks like, their history, how they're responding to the treatment.
Clinical judgment is key. Now, what about management? What are the most important things to do when treating acute pancreatitis?
Okay, so the foundation of our management is supportive care.
Right, supportive care. And what does that involve?
Lots of 5-E fluids, making sure their blood pressure is stable, controlling their pain with opiates, and keeping a close eye on their vital signs, electrolytes, and blood sugar. Those are the essentials.
Okay, got it. And what about those fluid collections that can happen in severe cases? How do we manage those?
Well, it depends. It depends on what kind of collection it is, how big it is, where it is, if it's causing symptoms, if there are signs of infection, lots of factors.
So a lot of nuance.
Exactly. For small collections that aren't causing problems, we might just watch and wait. But for larger ones, or if they're causing symptoms, we might need to drain them. And there are different ways to do that, endoscopically or percutaneously. Sometimes we even have to do surgery to remove the dead tissue.
So we have a lot of different options, and we choose the best one based on the individual patient.
Right. And we always have to think about the risks and benefits of each option. It's a decision we make together with the patient.
Shared decision-making is so important. Now, I want to challenge our listeners who are studying for the SCE exam. Imagine a patient walks into your clinic and you think they might have acute pancreatitis. How would you approach that? What questions would you ask? What tests would you order? How would you use those scoring systems to figure out their risk and come up with a plan?
That's a great challenge. It really makes them think about how to apply all this information in a real-life situation.
Exactly. And for our listeners who are already practicing gastroenterologists, I have a question for you to ponder. Knowing everything we know about acute pancreatitis and knowing that our treatments still have limitations, what do you think are the most promising areas of research? What breakthroughs would you like to see in the future?
That's a fantastic question. It really makes us think about the big picture and how we can improve things for our patients.
I'm really interested in personalized medicine. What if we could tailor the treatment based on each patient's genes, their risk factors, how they respond to different therapies?
That's a really exciting idea. And I'm also excited about the research into targeted therapies. Right now, a lot of what we do is just supportive care. But imagine if we could actually stop the inflammation from happening in the first place.
Wow, that would be a game changer.
It would. I think personalized medicine and targeted therapies have the potential to completely change how we diagnose, treat, and even prevent acute pancreatitis.
It's amazing to think about how those research advances could help our patients recover faster, have fewer complications, and live healthier lives.
It's a great time to be in gastroenterology. And I know our listeners, armed with all this knowledge, will be the ones making those breakthroughs happen.
Well said. On that note, I think we've covered everything we wanted to discuss about acute pancreatitis. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive.
It was my pleasure. And remember, knowledge is power, especially when it comes to acing those exams and taking care of our patients.
Absolutely. Until next time, keep those brains working, keep asking questions, and keep exploring the world of gastroenterology.